Hey everybody, welcome back to the Gray Malkin Lane channel Patreon. I am here on an early morning hanging out with my friend Ryan Cady. It's even earlier for him. Good morning, Ryan. How are you?
Good morning, Chad. I'm thrilled. I'm happy to be here. It's a bright, beautiful, absurdly sunny morning.
It is 8:30 my time on a Wednesday. I start my therapy day. I'm a therapist. I start my therapy day at 7. I have clients that are like gung ho early morning, like I'm ready to go. And I have others that are like, I would much rather die than show up at that time.
I cannot imagine doing therapy at this time of day. But morning people, as we talked about, you know.
Yeah, there's a certain subset of people. Like, I do my gym workout at like 5 a.m., but if I did it in the evening, I'd be like, oh, I don't want to do that. Where my husband, like, he's steadily at the gym at 5 p.m. every day. I think we just learned.
5 p.m. guy, right, with like the post-work rush.
Well, I mean, we have a home gym, but yes,
Oh, okay,
he goes
that
after
makes
work
sense.
to our home gym, and how are you, my friend? How's life?
I'm good. It's a fun, it's an interesting time. I just moved into a new place, and I've been working a contract job, so a lot of fun non-comic book stuff, which is rare.
The real life balancey stuff, balanced by you're doing some work for Valiant these days, correct?
Yes. I just wrapped up a mini series called The Valiants, which was sort of like are their big, I guess, runway to the resurgence event they're doing right now. So it was just sort of the catch-all super setup series. It was
And
fun. It was really fun.
is there anything else lined up for you?
I do have some secret stuff I'm working on, which is the annoying thing we must say.
It's the
But
NDA
yeah, I
thing. We
just
got
sort of
it.
NDA stuff. Yes.
Excellent. Well, that's good news. I think you're a talented writer. Ryan and I met initially at FanX a couple of years ago. Weirdly, then I discovered that he is very good friends with my very good friend, Philip Seavey, and it's just this little
Best.
tiny interconnected comic book world.
Phil CV brings a lot of good people together, truly.
Phil Seavey is one of the best people I've met in the last few years. Just a true joy. We met through the show initially, but we have very similar backgrounds and value sets, and our kids like to play together, and we have little movie nights, and it's fun. They are a great person, and their partner Christy is just a lovely person as well. I'm super grateful for both of them.
And there is like an alternate timeline where they started the Gray Malkin Lane channel instead of you. Like I see why the two of you get along so well. It's not everything else aside, like this could be their show.
Yeah, Phil could host this show. Phil could also write a story, but I can't draw worth shit. So there's a you, Phil's
Fair,
mark. There's
same.
it takes two Chads to get one Phil.
Is unfair that Phil can draw and write. It is a little unfair. I'm coming for
Yeah.
all of you writer artist combo people out there.
While like raising children and looking good in a romper, it's disgusting.
Too many talents. Too many talents for one human.
So you have a kind of new venture, it sounds like, new things happening in your life. Has it been a good summer for you?
It has, honestly. It like don't I say this with all the love for comics in my heart. It has been kind of nice to focus on a bunch of non-specific career stuff lately and just get like a new place in order, get, a bunch of non-hustle and grind work stuff place. And
Yeah.
yeah.
All things in season and in their
Exactly.
time. Absolutely. Yeah, there's moments of growth and mo moments of foundation building, I think. And we take the opportunities as they show up. I think you're a phenomenal writer. I love your grasp of continuity. Listeners of the show, I've had Ryan on a couple of times. We've talked Winter Guard, we've talked Valiants. It's great to have you on this channel. Thank you for joining. When I first proposed the idea of doing obscure characters, we kind of went back and forth on different characters, and I'm still not quite sure how we landed on this particular character. We're talking all about Nightside, who is one of the more overlooked members of the Imperial Guard, but not the most or overlooked, because there's a whole bunch of these guys you don't even know their names. Their names are printed
Truly.
in a handbook somewhere, and that's it. How did we land on Nightside? What's your connection to this particular character?
I was gonna say there. This is a weird one that we landed on. She might be my. She's the kind of character that my friends would be tempted to call like a Ryan Cady bait character or like a Ryan Cady core if they sort of learned about her. Because like spooky lady is always in my vibe of character I love, and I really do like Marvel, like the Dark Force in Marvel. Marvel is like a power set concept that's super interesting to me. But, you know, she doesn't really do a lot, bless her heart. I do think, even, you know, I was going through some of her appearances, and she is the classic example of that sentence you just said, where most of the time she is showing up, she is just one of like 13 Shi'ar Imperial Guard members in the background, you know, sort of flying around. I was rereading, I'm sure we'll go through, I don't want to do out of order, but I was rereading the X-Men 107 stuff, like the Phoenix stuff, and the amount of, like, I'm like, oh, this is her first appearance, all these things. And in most, I think in two out of those three issues, she does not do anything at all, and is just sort of high to see her at a couple panels, or like Flashfire jumps in front of her or something. So she is an interesting choice, but I'm excited to talk
about it. If you think about like spooky ladies in fiction that are on your list of like people you're a big fan of, who's on that list?
Oh gosh, on the spot, I'm always bad at stuff like this. I mean, like, the obvious easy one that's like a dumb answer but is great for your fans is Emma. Like, I love Emma Frost. She's not really spooky, but like, if I could use a different Shi'ar character, like Deathbird is a great Ryan Katie Bay character.
Deathbird's in my top five favorite ex-villains. I love her.
She rules. And another fun treat about going through all this stuff is seeing the different, how the head shape of a Shi'ar changes over issues. But she always has like a nice, like, horrifying razor thing going on, which is nice.
Are you like a guy that likes like Elvira or like a Vampirella? Like, do you like a, like,
no,
a dark?
No, I like a real villainess. Like, I like a, yeah, like an actually threatening, scary, like dangerous, like, woman. Like, you've been posting a lot lately about what's her face, who works with Mandrill.
Necra.
You know, Necra is in theory another Ryan Katie Bay character, like an actual evil sorceress. I'm not as much of a campy guy. Like, no shade to Elvira Vampire. I'm a horror guy. I love those ladies with their vibes. But that's sort of like the difference here, is that like I just like love an actual like evil power set, bad, ominous, connected to mysterious forces, dark.
You
lady
like
character. What's her face from DC is the big example. Lyssa Drak.
Oh, sure.
I like the fact that I went out of the way to use her in one of my Green Lantern things is because, like, oh, she is like really evil and is like connected to primordial fear, eldritch power set.
Yeah. You like a character that scares you just a little bit, but also turns you on just a little bit. That's what I'm.
Yeah, getting. I mean, you know, we're dancing around that side of it. I, you know, it's not that's not always necessarily a factor. You know, it is nice to just have somebody in charge who has a clear vision. Sometimes that vision is ending the world in some sort of dark magic apocalypse, and these things happen. And it's important to have a vision.
We are not here to kink shame at all. A recent character that shows up in the comics quite often, I've become dear friends with Erica Schultz, who's been doing the character Hallow's Eve in Marvel, who puts on the different, you know, monster masks and turns into, you know, she's got that like jilted woman energy, but she'll kick your ass. She's going to do what she's going to do. You also, we got to talk about your love of the character Darkstar on the show.
Yes.
Who I understand is being used in X-Factor soon by Mark Russell, which I'm excited about. We haven't seen a Darkstar energy in a while.
I'm very excited to see what, like, because just, it was nice to see her. Obviously, I got to use her in Winter Guard, but before then, like, getting to see, like, Jason Aaron, not front and center, but give her, like, a lot more attention on that Winter Guard team, and her as sort of, like, the dark side parallel to Captain Marvel. Also, I don't know. She's an interesting character to me, and I'm sure Russell, who's just really fun stuff.
And then they, like, killed her for a while and, like, made different Dark Stars, like, carry her energy into combat. Crazy chronology.
They do a lot of that. Speaking of getting, you know, killed and reappearing, I'm sure we'll talk about that today with Nightside as well.
I have a long list of like camp villains that I really love. Darkstar's dad, the Presence, is one of my favorites, who I've never even mentioned on my show before, but I'm an old like Defenders head. Daredevil and Defenders, outside of X-Men, are my favorites, and the Presence has like a pretty long run in the early Defenders, which I adore. I think
what's his deal?
He like lives in Chernobyl and like absorbed all the radiation, so now he's like this red guy in gold armor that like floats around in a chair and tries to turn everything into radiation. He's kind of scary and kind of fantastic. His name is
that's
the Presence.
Cool.
I am the
Presence.
Presence.
It's hard to beat that name.
Yeah, that's Darkstar and Vanguard's dad. He's a fascinating character.
See the both sides there. That guy, you know, you follow the Vanguard path or the Darkstar path.
Yeah,
an ominous dude in floating gold armor.
Another character I think you would just fucking love is Zaladade, if you know that character. Like the
Zaladade.
She's like an evil chick from the Savage Land who's like a dark
sorceress
who like flies around on a bird and like tries to kill people. She's great. We covered her introduction in the early 70s on my show earlier this year. Believed to be Polaris's sister, Magneto killed her one time. time. She's fascinating. I think you'd enjoy her a lot,
Wow.
actually.
Okay, I'll look up Zaladin. Well, and also, yeah, I love like Flores too, so that'll be fun. I love coming away with homework. I'm ready to go.
Yeah, we'll talk Zaladin another time if you'd like. It just take me a while because I got a spreadsheet of characters to cover.
I mean, you're making time for Nightside. I assume the list is
You know,
miles long.
once you have a place on my calendar, though, I will give you all my love for each of these characters. So Nightside is on that list. Now, the Imperial Guard is like super well regarded among X-Men fans. It's that Dave Cockrum, like early, just delicious artwork. A lot of the Imperial Guard characters, as famous as they are, because they have those X-Men designs. In fact, if you Google Nightside, you can find like seven or eight different like costume redesigns by fans on like DeviantArt and shit. Like people like these characters a lot. But outside of like Gladiator and Oracle, you can't really find a lot of character development for any of the Imperial Guard. Fang has a little bit in like some Wolverine books. And then you got to jump to like other titles. In fact, Nightside's only character exploration is weirdly kind of like in Avengers West Coast. There's not a lot about her in X-Men comics, but the visual on all of these characters is amazing. What's your connection to the Imperial Guard, if any?
I obviously, I think, we talked about it on the show before. I think I got a chance to participate in the I got to do an Imperial Guard one shot for Heroes Reborn when they just redid it, and so I was like thrilled to do that. I'm like, oh, I didn't even have Nightside in the background there, ships in the night. But no, I always really like them. I like them more than Legion of Superheroes. Is that sort of a heretical opinion? I am like historically more of a DC guy, but Legion of Superheroes is not really my thing, whereas the Shi'ar always have this, like, I don't know, they have a really interesting presence in the Marvel universe, and I love Corsair and the Starjammers, so I've always just sort of been into the Imperial Guard as this factor that is always showing up in like X-Men stories I'm reading. I think they're really fascinating. I love, like you said, they all have incredible designs, and when we were doing that one shot, because Heroes Reborn was alternate timeline stuff, it was sort of like, well, just pick through who looks cool and what power sets and what you can do with them. And I kind of focused more on Oracle and obviously Gladiator, but then like Neutron and Flashfire, because they have sort
Well,
of more
it's a
modern
Hyperion
questions.
story, absolutely. And Michel
Yeah.
Banditti's pencils on that, just
Oh,
kiss.
thank
It's
you.
so good, so
Like,
good.
I didn't think there's like a splash that Bandini did where like the Brood is taking over people, and so like the whole thing is from like a Brood head, and you're seeing all the little panels inside. I was like, I got very lucky. That was a really fun thing to do.
A lot of the Imperial Guardsmen have like just like a visual gimmick, right? Earthquake has that like weird rocky head, and Gladiator's got his mohawk, and Neutron has his like starry skin. Manta is like the giant billowy cape. With the light flashes, you know, you did your story. It sounds like you chose characters related to power set primarily. Is that what I'm hearing?
Yeah, primarily, and I was also like, I was doing it as like the idea of the story was very much like teen horror one shot, like they're gonna go, teens on summer camp are about to get taken out by aliens, basically. So I tried to pick people whose power set, but also like I was like, oh, what personalities? But so obviously Flashfire is a hothead, and I put him and Neutron together in a couple because it was an alternate timeline, and they're all aliens and they're all hot, so they should all kiss each other, all of them. I also, and Manta because of the billowy cloak. But now that I'm like, some of the Nightside stuff I've been catching on. I mean, like, dang, like Manta and Nightside have actually really good. They've got like a cloak and dagger thing. And I'm like, damn, I would love to see that played with more. And now I'm like, well, dummy, you could have played with that more.
And more X-Men specific. I don't think we talked about this part on the main show, but you also did that like Starjammers backup at the end of that one, which
Yeah.
is way fun. Really fun to play in the sandbox. The Shi'ar Empire is very much Star Wars Empire,
Yes. And
kind of
I mean,
mixed with, oh Ryan's showing me a
big
tattoo.
Star Wars guy, so.
Mixed with a little bit of like Game of Thrones energy, right? It's like the royal throne wars with the Imperial Guard being kind of the Knights of the Round Table, except they're real powerful. There's a lot of retcons about these guys over the years. We learn much later on that like each member of the Imperial Guard comes from like a planet that the Shi'ar has brought into their empire because they're all about like marriage of culture, even though it's really just conquering and like the
Yes.
Crusades, you know, as they worship their gods. And each member of the Imperial Guard like earns a place on the team. And if you die, you get someone else from your planet to take your place. That's really widely explored in a few places where there's like a whole planet full of like Imperial Guard trainees. I like that less. I think it's still great. It's fun, but I kind of like the idea of this like classic team of heroes fighting across space for their king, you know. The Imperial Guard always, for the most part, being loyal to whoever sits on the throne, whether that's Lilandra, Deathbird, Deken, Gladiator, or Vulcan. You know, there's a lot of usage of these guys as like the imperial force. The word imperial tells us all we need already. Thoughts on the Shi'ar Empire and its setup with these guys?
The Shi'ar never did anything wrong, as far as I can recollect, as a culture. No, I mean, like when you're a kid, especially, and for me, you know, being like a sporadic reader, like just grabbing trades and reading random stuff here and there, and being like, "Who are these bird people? And why is Professor X dating one of them?" And then learning that they're, you know, like super conquerors and stuff. But no, to your earlier bit, like I do love the Imperial Guard as this sort of like a collection of as a this example of their like multicultural like values and force. But then the Game of Thrones of it all, like I was, you know, it's so fun to play with them for pathos. Like, yeah, sometimes they're working for Ken the Mad, you know, like sometimes they're working for Lilandra, sometimes they're working for Deathbird. And there's always this sort of like, well, Gladiator is always kind of a noble guy. Then sometimes you get to have those moments where he's like, have I served a mad woman? Like, what am I doing with my power? And so, yeah, I think that side of it is always really rich and makes them interesting villains because they're almost always sympathetic.
I'll do the trial of Gladiator on my show one day. Him as the like the Lancelot, the lead knight
Ooh,
struggling,
the
wrestling with duty, but his
Lancelots.
powers are literally confidence based. If he doubts himself, he loses his strength. So there's like a Samson energy about him, like don't cut his hair, you know? And then he ends up on the throne for a period of time after the War of Kings. Like Gladiator is the Shi'ar Empire, like emperor for a period of time, which is also very interesting.
Wow. Oh, I was gonna say it's funny you bring up the hair thing. There was I feel like his mohawk is almost always perfectly straight. And I was like going through some of the stuff and looking at that Imperial Guard 3-issue run. And there's a panel in there where he is like falling and his mohawk has been like swept aside of his face. And he looks like such a different character. I was like, whoa, I don't think I've ever seen him look specifically. It was very, very wild. And I was like, I guess I thought that maybe his hair was somehow perfectly rigid or,
He's
you know.
a character that's rarely at the forefront of the story, much like Oracle, but when he is, there's a lot of really fascinating things. There's an evil, like, hot lady version of Gladiator out there named the
You shouldn't
Strontian,
say stuff
who
like that to me, you
she's
know.
got she's purple and got like big boobs that are like out, and she's like punching you in the face. It's very Power Girl. He also has a kid, right? Like there was that Jason Aaron run where a kid
Yes.
Gladiator is part of a Kubark. His name's Kubark. There's a lot to explore with a lot of these characters, and any of them in the forefront I think is fascinating. Now, historically, Dave Cockrum designed these characters to resemble the Legion of Superheroes over at DC. Are you a Legion of Superheroes guy? Tell us a little bit about this team and why they matter.
So I always feel kind of it's like a big weird blind spot. And so for me, the Legion is strongly associated with like arcs I'd read or when they'd show up in cartoons or on things. It's like, what? Why are we all of a sudden in the future? Or like, why are we dealing with all these kids? Like, I don't. It always felt like intrusive stuff. So I think that's why I have like a weird, not a real bias, because I'll constantly be introduced to cool people on the Legion or be sort of like exposed to stories where they rock. But there is just sort of this. In my head, I strongly associate them as being weirdly like intrusive onto narratives I'd rather otherwise be focused on. You know,
Yeah,
like
they're
sometimes the space stuff gets in the way.
in the early 80s when I was growing up as like a little kid. I was born in 78. I used to watch like reruns of the show Super Friends, which is like
Yes. Oh,
old
yeah.
cartoon. It's terrible when you look at it from
No, an
the
absolute
perspective.
blast.
But there's just a ton of characters running around, and it's very classic early, you know, mid 70s cartoon energy. The Legion of Superheroes has like just this wide, giant cast of characters, all colorful costumes, all colorful names. And they started in 1958, and like just their continuity ran until like the mid 90s, and then they've been rebooted a couple of times. And there are like dozens and dozens and dozens of these characters, and they're like the heroes from space that exist in like the 31st century, and they like have have a wide array of members. The Green Lantern has its own like Green Lantern Corps, and the JLA have their base of operations. It's very much that, but there's a bunch of just weird ones. And most of the Imperial Guard are based off of some of these classic designs. It's like a direct ripoff in the way that the Squadron Supreme is a ripoff of the JLA, and DC has some of these versions of Marvel characters, etc. It's like playing in the sandbox. The company's kind of going back and forth. So Nightside is based off of a character named Shadow Lass, who first shows up in Adventure Comics 354 in March 1967. Superman encounters like statues of some superheroes that have been lost in combat that are honored by the Legion of Superheroes in their base with just like, statues. One of them is Pharaoh Lad, there's Chemical King and Quantum Queen and Reflecto and Shadow Woman. And it says on her statue that she died saving everyone from a science asteroid. And she's a white
Gotta watch
woman.
out for those.
She's a white woman in like a black bathing suit costume that like ties back into a cape. She's got black boots. There's more of the members inside: Lightning Man, Polar Man, Saturn Woman, Timberwolf, Cosmic Man, Element Man. Like there's just a bajillion of these guys. So Superman arrives and he is on the Legion's asteroid, and the teen heroes are now adults, and he sees the Shadow Lass statue, and he also there's another room of statues dedicated to people who have been married and like left the team, which is also really funny to me. You either die or you get married. It's the only way out.
Oh.
But we don't officially meet Shadow Lass until issue 365. She's got like a pale blue color, like jet black hair and costume, and she can send dark shadow out through her cape, which is very Manta sending the light forward, right? And she can see in the dark, and she's kind of great. And there's a couple reboots of this character. They've brought her back in different ways across the years, but that's the basis for the character Nightside. I don't know if you have any thoughts on Shadow Lass, which is such a good name.
It is a very good name. It's such a good name that, like, it stands out so hard. Those Legion names are so obviously designing a billion characters. So, of course, you're just like Lightning Lad, Pharaoh, like, you're just like Thing Guy, like Girl, Laser Boy. It's just like, what do I use? What, et cetera. But Shadow Lass stands out so well. And also, Shadow Woman is such a nothing burger of a title that you're like, stuck with Lass. I don't know if you're going to go.
I think Marvel has a
Somebody
Shadow
edit the
Woman.
statue.
I think Marvel has a Shadow Woman, but they renamed her Sepulchre, which is a
That is a
great
cool
name.
name
Oh,
that probably went nowhere.
that's a character that Ryan Katie would like. I'll send you like
Sepulchre.
the encyclopedia write-up. Yeah, she was like a Secret Defenders like early 90s. She kind of looks like Spider-Woman, but then she goes super dark. She has like an arc in the Thunderbolts under Warren Ellis. Not an oft-used character,
Okay.
but I think you'd like her.
I love that.
So we go to X-Men 107 one through 109, which is early Claremont, John Byrne. It's the soap opera Space Empire. Do you want to set up this story and why it's so infamous for everybody?
I mean, this is Phoenix stuff. This is where it's all starting. When you see that Macron crystal and the nine Death Stars arranged in their cross, that like this is where it's all going off. I didn't realize that this is where we learn Corsair's identity. Is this and correct me if I'm wrong, like is this moment where this is all going on, has it been revealed to the audience before
No,
that Corsair has made herself? No, right?
it
This is
still
the
takes a
moment.
while. There's that like issue a while later where like Cyclops is looking in the water. He's grown a mustache and he's like, "Huh, I kind of look like that space guy, Corsair that I met."
Is that really? I've never seen that panel. Is that really? He
It's
really like
great.
sees himself, but is like, I look like Corsair.
It's
No,
great.
I love that. I and when obviously like talking about that, I said it all right now. But when Storm is like, girl, like, are you sure you should keep this secret from him? He will get really sad and wear a mustache. It'd be weird, I love that. I love that the peak of all this X-Men character drama is getting like shoved into the space chaos, and they're learning who Lilandra is. They're learning that Professor X has a relationship with an alien. They're learning what the Phoenix really is. I mean, these panels here at the end of 10, or is it the end of 108, or where we're seeing the like the side view of like Phoenix Force actually really looking like a bird as it's chipping into the darkness at the center of the crystal. Oh, this is thrilling stuff.
A peek behind the curtain, and this is not a story I've shared on the show before. Back when I'm working on the handbooks, they would propose the rosters for like the next handbooks coming out. And I could sign up for as many pages as I wanted, as long as I had them done at a particular time. And if I took a character like the owl, I have to read all of Owl's appearances, summarize his entire history in just a couple of pages. There's the power set. You've got to look up his height and weight and figure it out by like calculating how he stands next to other characters. And there's just this long like list of things you have to do. And the pay rate is very low. Some of the characters I signed up for were super easy. Others were very challenging. And three of the most difficult profiles I ever did for the Marvel Handbooks, one was on the character Klaw, KLAW, because it took me so long to figure out how his powers work because they're so very different from appearance to appearance. The second one was the Imperial Guard, and the third was the Shi'ar Empire. And when I wrote the Shi'ar Empire, you have to read every appearance. There's a section at the start where it's like known members of the race, and every character who's ever been named in any thought bubble like has to go in. It's super comprehensive.
Oh
Like,
my God.
but I did all of the Imperial Guard writing. And because I was writing for the Marvel Appendix at the time, I also put up profiles on all these characters on the appendix. So if anybody looks at the Marvel Appendix, all the Imperial Guard profiles are by me. There's the Imperial Guard at the beginning, everybody's just kind of in the background. Some of them aren't even named, but we get a lot of characters like Smasher and Tempest and Titan. Some of them get name changes later, like Midget becomes Scintilla, which I completely understand because that's
Yeah.
not a super okay name. Magic becomes Magique with a UE at the end. And one of these characters is Nightside. She does not have a lot to do, but she does have an amazing look. Do you want to talk about Nightside's costume?
So there are a lot of costumes this era on women, female characters, where there is the sort of connected at the belly button midriff sort of like subtitle, like obviously Storm's in this era, but Nightside has this sort of like gold, I don't even know what it is, you'd call it like an amulet sort of protective little armor thing around her belly button, and then the rest of her is just like black swirlies. She's got these amazing arm darkness, like they're not really even sleeves, but they kind of are. She's
They're
got like a
like
headdress, she's all
sleeves, but they
blue.
have a whole bunch of like holes in them. So there's like exposed arm on the sides of her sleeves and all the way down her boots as well.
She's very Vampire the Masquerade, which is also an amazing thing for a character to be. I also like, she's got no, she's all sclera. Her eyes, peaky spooky lady is like, her eyes ain't just, it's just all white or all black.
White
And
eyes with
she,
like dark like shadow circles around the
yeah,
eyes.
like almost like Pagliacci-esque, but horror tinge. And then perhaps that her, we talk about, we've done a lot of cape talk today, that she somehow has a bat-like Dracula-inspired cape
It's
all the way in his
very much
face.
like the Necro Cape we've been talking about on the main show. It's very
Yes.
vampire, but she's got like a gothy, there's like a blue tinge to her skin, offset by like her costume is like black, but like a purplish black. And then
Yes.
the little pops of gold, right? Like her gold little navel thing. And then she's got like a little gold wispy crown on her head and like the slick back black hair. This is when I sent you the picture of this character, you're like, oh, this is the one. Yep, this is
Yeah,
it.
no, this is a Ryan Kate. And what's funny, because she her behavior, when I say that she's Ryan Katie Bate less than Ryan Katie Core, she is not like really particularly spooky, but more than anything, she's not sort of like she's neither threatening nor spooky, right? She's just sort of got amazing design, and it's just sort of, which is kind of cool that she's got this amazing design and this spooky vibe, and she just sort of is yet another member of the Imperial Guard,
And we could go
later on she hits
down,
on command. Yeah, well.
and we could go down list by list of these characters. There's just some iconic designs. The character Hussar, who's like
Oh,
the red chick
yes.
with the white and the boots and the whip and the like blonde hair. God, Neutron is another one that really stands out. Gladiator, the
Neutron
Mohawk.
pops so hard in the Cockrum Neutron stuff. I know that's why I picked him, I'm sure, but there's one panel where he's like blocking with his arm a little bit, and just the star effect, and I don't know,
And in a
people
world that has
Cockrum
3,000
nailed it.
fire characters, the character Starbolt really stands out. You know, even Fang,
Yes.
who has been given a shocking amount of exploration in recent years, he dies and then comes back because he's got like a node that floats near him. And unless you destroy this invisible node, he can resurrect. There's a lot of weird, crazy shit with these characters. But Nightside stands out. She pops, and a lot of these characters really pop. They're very unique, original, incredible designs. And then that's kind of all we get from her. For a real long time, she's very supplemental to that initial story. She's there to help contain the Phoenix Force. I'm always fascinated how everybody says the name of that crystal differently. It's McCrane or Macron or Mcron or like there's
Yeah. How do you, I was gonna say, I say Macron. What do you, or
growing up I said McCrane in my brain, but I think I say it like Mcron now. That's how I most often hear it, which is interesting. I recently got to reread X-Men Spotlight on Starjammers. I interviewed Terry Cavanagh on my show, although we didn't talk about the book. It's the first time I'd read it in a long time. This is the infamous panel of the Bald Phoenix, where Professor X dresses up in Jean Grey's Phoenix Force costume. It's delightful. This is a two-issue limited series from 1990, where
Oh, yeah.
Deathbird is commanding the Imperial Guard because Lilandra is part of the Starjammer. She's, Princess Leia on the run, basically. And, Excalibur's there and the X-Men are there. And Nightside has like a little moment where she gets overwhelmed by all the little creatures that Chode's friend Kree, these are names I don't know how to say either. Chode is Ch apostrophe OD.
I think
Ch-od?
it's Chaod. Yeah, I think
Yeah,
or
because
Chaod or Chode.
Chode is an
This is
unpleasant word. Look it up on
it
Urban
is.
Dictionary if you'd like. And then he has a little white furry weasel creature that like hangs out on his shoulder, and his name is CR plus sign EEE. So Kree? I don't know how to say it.
It's
But
definitely not Scree, but
yeah,
that's what I do in my head. It's definitely not that, but that's.
so Kree like overwhelms Nightside with a bunch of little white fluffy creatures, and that's kind of it. Like that's basically all that happens for her in this issue. But again, fun to see her show up. Did you have thoughts on this little two-issue arc? It's a good time.
Specifically, that it's like that she is defeated by a bunch of cutesy fluffy creatures is very fun.
Like her only words on the page.
She looks in that little it's in that panel specifically is in the appendix thing. She's just sort of like, oh, get these things off. Like it's very funny. And her cape is so like it's one of those like how absurd it would be to be a Dracula in real life, you know?
Yeah, I wrote that appendix profile. I wrote that. I put that image on that web page where
As
she
well.
all the creatures are going yip 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 yip, and she's freaked out a little bit. We jump into the mid 90s. Have you ever read Operation Galactic Storm before? This is an Avengers
No.
series. This is a long series. It's based in the Shi'ar versus the Kree, and the Supreme Intelligence is doing some real bad shit, and everybody's like at war, and they're setting off bombs, and the Avengers get involved, and it ends with, although it's later retconned that they've been influenced by a supervillain, it ends with a group of the Avengers assassinating the Supreme Intelligence, which then puts Hala or the Kree homeworld firmly in the control of the Shi'ar Empire, which is a storyline we see play out at the X-Men for a long time. In the modern comics, the Kree and the Shi'ar are united as an empire under the rule of like Hulkling and Wiccan now. That's the Kree-Shi'ar alliance. But Operation Galactic Storm is a wild, like Avengers in space political intrigue story. It's a pretty good time. And the Avengers fight members of the Imperial Guard in several of these breakout issues. And this is ironically Avengers West Coast number 81, I think, is the issue that has the most Nightside exploration out of like one other. Did you get a chance to look at this issue?
I was going to say, this is the one that I had trouble finding, actually.
Yeah.
But I was the most excited to read. I was trying to catch up on this one, but I couldn't find it the other
No,
day.
yeah,
But
that's
I was
fine.
gonna have you on the appendix, and this looks like a good issue. She's
Yeah,
like
it's
saying
really
her
good.
name, you know?
Nightside is sent to battle the Avengers, and she gets a lot more dialogue. She says, "My name in your primitive tongue would be Nightside. Does that give you a hint what my special power is?" And she blankets Mockingbird and US Agent in darkness. We'll talk about the Dark Force dimension in a minute. She evades their attack and says, "I'm really a bit more agile than you Terrans give me credit for." And she also says, "Of course, as a weapon, darkness has its limitations. That's why I always carry a concussion gun for good measure." So, some good old-fashioned supervillain dialogue. When they're defeated, she turns to Scintilla, who is the size-changing, like a little shrinky-ding member of the Imperial Guard. She says, "You may come out of my shadow now, Scintilla." Scintilla says, "The story of my life, no matter what world we're on. Now, now, don't be bitter, little one. My sensors tell me our fellow Shi'ar are in that receptacle yonder." Scintilla says, "Then stop patting yourself on the back and free them. I just don't appreciate your being in charge, that's all. Why don't they put someone my size in command for a change?" Nightside says, "Because some foot soldier might step on you, and there goes the mission." And they free some Shi'ar agents. Warstar is there. This is the robot dude with the little guy on his back driving him around. She also fights Dr. Pym, She-Hulk, and Gilgamesh, but she gets defeated by Spider-Woman, the Julia Carpenter version. But hey, she got some dialogue, and she got to like quip with her teammate a little bit. What are your thoughts on Nightside here?
That's fun. fun stuff. I love that. I love that she's like first of all, I think we can agree Terran is the ideal term that aliens should use for us, right?
Okay.
I figured. I like it's just it's it feels good, so I love when they say that. And special power is such a there's something so like deliberately arch in a dated way about a villain being like my special power. It's like whereas like everybody now people are so like, you know, my powers. Everybody has abilities. It'd be weird if you said that. You know, there's something really like delightful about that. Although I wanted to talk about her power. I know we'll get into Dark Force later.
Well,
in
let's
general.
Talk about Dark Force now. Tell us about the Dark Force dimension.
So the Dark Force dimension is one of the many other dimensions in you know the Marvel universe where power comes from. Cloak of Cloak and Daggers, his powers are of the Dark Force. Obviously, Darkstar from the Winter Guard, who we were talking about earlier, she accesses it. Chernabog and Winter Guard does as well. And I believe
my favorite is Silhouette from the New Warriors.
Okay, yeah. There are a few, right? There's like you could easily assemble several different Dark Force rosters of teams of people who use this power, but a lot of people like can do stuff. You know, like Darkstar can summon power from it and like shoot beams and energies. Some characters can form like shadow constructs out of the energy. Nightside seems to just be able to make it dark. She can teleport through it in like later iterations of her, right? We'll see her sort of use it to teleport and to like appear and reappear and stuff and sort of shadow jump, which I think is more common, but she just can't really do shadow manipulation. Like she just sort of makes it dark, right? Like I'm seeing mainly.
Yeah. So like Cloak can put people in his cloak and like they have like a penance stare kind of moment where they face their sins or get driven mad. Silhouette can like meld into shadow and out of shadow. The Dark Force dimension has been used in two enormous Marvel events in the last like 10 years. One of them where the like city of New York got blanketed under the dark, like when the Secret Empire took over the world. And then more recently, Jed McKay just did the Blood Hunt story where the sun gets blacked out completely and vampires are like drawing their strength. And then there's a number of like side characters that use the Dark Force a lot. You mentioned Chernobog and Darkstar. It's also a place like Doctor Strange or Selene may like draw upon energy for like spells. There's the character Doorman from the Great Lakes Avengers, who is a mutant who is like black costume with white eyes, and he can like put himself against the door and you walk through him, which is technically a Dark Force thing, and you like get to the other
side. Okay.
But then
there's
becomes
a lot of Dark Force mutants, which is weird to me.
But then he becomes like the avatar of death, that Doorman character, which is crazy.
Oh.
But yeah, certain mutants are born with like a connection to another realm, magic with Limbo, right? Or certain characters that have connections. Silhouette, again, is my favorite, although I do like a lot of these characters. And there's a bunch more. We won't take time to list them all. But yeah, Darkstar, Silhouette, and Doorman are all mutants. There's also that character Blackout from the Masters of Evil, who like trapped Monica Rambeau in like a version of the Dark Force, like a hard Dark Force bubble. I think Mr. Negative.
I was gonna say I wanted to ask you about that if we had time, because I didn't think of him as being like a Dark Force guy, but when I was like, oh, who's everybody who uses it? Every version of him is like a Dark Force power user. I was like, oh, I assumed it was negative dimension, negative energy he was using.
Yeah, no, he can like he like draws on, because there's also the light force, which is what Dagger's connected to, but he can like draw on energy and like invert your personality a little bit, which is so there's different ways this is used, and it's a whole realm, like there's people that live there. So Nightside's connection to this has never really been explored, even when there's big Dark Force dimension stories being told. Nightside's off in space, right? Like she doesn't get to be a part of that. Think of her code name, by the way, the name Nightside.
It is a really cool code name. I don't know. Well, it does fit her powers. I guess I just, I don't know. There's something about it that is a little incongruous with her to me for some reason, but I love it. Like, it is a cool name. Maybe it seems incongruous because I'm like, oh, she's just languishing in unused in darkness with such a rad code name.
Yeah.
I don't know. I feel like, but I also don't think Nightside is a super villainous name either. Like, Nightside has to be a good guy with that name, or like a, maybe a second banana, but it's hard to think of Nightside as being your main bad guy.
But again, when you stand out on a list of you know, dark characters, you know, I like Nightside better than Shadowlass. Actually, Shadowlass is pretty great.
See, the thing about Shadowlass is like when you say it, it has a ring to it, and it's kind of like it's very classic in a good way. Shadowlass really kind of rides the line.
By the way, I didn't mention before, Nightside, her name was revealed in like the Marvel handbook entry of the characters on the Imperial Guard. Like, so she first appeared in the late 70s. things, but it's not until the Marvel handbooks where they like give you all the images of the characters and give them names. That's when it takes place. Nightside, if I read her official power set the way that I wrote it up, and this is direct quote, Nightside is a shadow caster like the other members of her race. Others believe her power is inherent, but she keeps it a secret that she draws it from another dimension. Nightside enshrouds her opponents in a cloak of darkness that can cause beings and objects to plunge into a nightmarish void. However, using her powers chills her, and she's afraid of darkness except for her own. Nightside can fly either from her own power or by using a Shi'ar anti-gravity device. It's likely the full extent of her powers remains unrevealed. And we always had to write that shit like at the end of every, like, it remains unrevealed, everything that she could do.
Of course.
Yeah. Any thoughts on her power set or on her, well, let's actually just move forward. She shows up a bunch more throughout that Operation Galactic Storm story. She's in Quasar. She's in a series called Star Blast, where there she gets
what to is play. That
Star Blast is a early cosmic 90s like 4-issue limited series by Mark Grunwald that ties together a bunch of plot lines that are very peripheral, but she does get to fight Dark Star in that series, which is fun.
I would love I don't know, now you're really geared me up for like a Dark Force pitch. Now I'm like, some Marvel editor is going to get a really annoying email in their inbox in a couple weeks.
I am here as a resource. Schedule a Zoom call with me. We'll talk all about the Dark Force. I write the encyclopedias, man. That's what I'm here for.
you wrote the book on the Dark Force.
Her next big exploration, and it's kind of the only other one, is the Imperial Guard limited series, which is a weird 3-issue series in 1997. It's got like a real Saturday morning cartoon feel. You can see, you know, the Shi'ar have just conquered the Kree, and the Kree have all these like rebels and like military dudes on Earth looking for revenge. Did you get to read this one?
I did. I liked this one. It was real fun and throwbacky. That Chuck Wojciech art.
Yeah.
I mean, that is stylized fun as hell. I read it last week, and I finished the first issue, and I was like, oh man, like I really like, she doesn't have anything in this either, like she's barely in it. And then the second issue opens from her narration, and I'm like, Nightside boys, we're eating good. Yeah,
I mean, it's fine.
But it's pretty fine. She doesn't really, I was like, oh boy. And then she mainly is just like, Commando's kind of hot, and I'm like, think so? He's okay, he's kind of having some sort of like pre-breakdown right now. I don't
know. The basic premise of this series is the heroes have gone missing. This is Heroes Reborn, which again, fast forward 30 years for Ryan Cady's version of this with the Imperial Guard. But you know, Franklin Richards created his little blue ball and sent everybody away after Onslaught. And Lilandra, for reasons, sends members of the Imperial Guard to live on Earth to like watch out for them. You almost wonder if she did it because Charles just went evil and she's feeling kind of crazy, or maybe there is like hidden resistance. Like they're spying, they're gathering intel, they have secret missions. But this is basically a series about certain members of the Imperial Guard adopting like civilian identities and living on Earth and like having superhero stuff to do. It ends with them taking a Kree like military rebel and adding him to their ranks as a member named Commando. It's fine. That's the basic story being told.
Really fine. It's another 3 issues of Nightside not really doing anything.
Yeah.
Fortunate.
But it's fun. It's a fun read. Nightside has like a civilian look too. Yeah, she's African American instead of blue. She has like dark slick back hair, like wears purple, so very similar to her main look, but has got like a real like
cartoon character. Does she resemble in that? She like really looks like somebody to me, and it's driving me crazy. I don't know. I'm like, hey Chad, what's this thing that fired in, what neuron just fired in my head? But yeah,
I truly have no idea.
It might just be because Wojciech's art is so cool and dynamic and cartoony in here, but yeah, but there are a few, like when Gladiator first shows up, he like looks like Clark Kent the whole time in his civilian identity. So I do almost sort of, I'm like, are they like trying to have them look like specific people? Anyway,
she gets a couple brief moments in this. They're fighting the Kree resistance. A caption tells us that Nightside revels in her darker nature. There's a moment where she like blankets some criminals in like darkness. Flash fires, hitting others with light, and she goes, "Be glad it is I who takes you humans. Flashfire always makes things so painfully bright." There's that thing where we take like a character and we like define their personality based on their superpower. She revels in her darker nature and hates the light. Like there's like some Eartha Kitt energy there that's kind of fun.
Eartha Kitt is exactly what you're doing. I like that thing better. I will say I do like from the Cockermera stuff this idea that she's like, oh, actually, like I'm super afraid of my dark force dimension because, and I guess it seems like this has been dropped, but it would be cool to maybe they were thinking of exploring that earlier, that she also can kind of do the cloak thing where like when people are in her dark force, they are like chilled and freaked out.
Yeah, that
So.
story plus, like, if we had some room, Jonathan Hickman during the Krakoa era was gonna do like a long form Imperial Guard series, but it never happened, and I wish it had.
God,
The
what I
idea of
would give.
like an elite team of these characters, and you know, like mutant circuits, you figure out ways for their powers to work together, fastball special style. Like the Imperial
Yeah.
has got to have some great like usage of powers. I think a lot of these characters are ripe for potential. In Imperial Guard number two, the members have been captured by the Kree, and Nightside's the focal character very briefly. As you open the book, she's hanging upside down, and I'll read the captions here because it's kind of the only insight we ever really get into her character. Her name is Nightside, a member of the Shi'ar Imperial Guard Royal Elite. Like many of the denizens of her home planet, she is a shadow caster, possessed of the ability to generate total blackness on command. It is assumed by many that this power comes from within the caster, but Nightside knows otherwise. She knows that she and her kind channel this black force from some dread and awful extra-dimensional source, and use this power to touch, if only briefly, a nightmarish other realm that chills her almost as much as it does those she uses it against. So there's the cloak energy you're looking for. Awakening
Yeah.
disoriented in darkness, Nightside is convinced that her worst fears have been realized, fear that she has been consumed by her own dark power and is now condemned to live in that hellish blackness forever. That one with her ability should be afraid of the dark is an irony that escapes Nightside for the moment. So she's not just afraid of the dark, she's afraid of being overwhelmed by her power and lost in the dark force dimension, which, and I always end these shows with like, what story do you need about this character? This is the story. She has some sort of
Yes.
story where she like got lost and lost something there, and like it sparked her journey to join the Imperial Guard afterward. They fight off the Kree and they go home to Lilandra at the end. That's where that's at. Thoughts on this kind of introspection into Nightside?
Again, it's like that's like what I was telling you when I opened that issue, I was like, oh, this is gonna be good. And then like I would have loved to, I just assuming from that opening that you're gonna get a lot of her and explore that a lot this issue and see it. And you don't, it's kind of a bummer. But again, like yeah, it just makes you be like, okay, well, eventually dark. But no, it kind of makes you all Imperial Guard stuff is like this to me. I don't know if you feel this way, where whenever they get like a real story where you get to see them interacting, you're kind of like, books, like they should have a book. I want to see these kids all hang out and explore stuff.
The
What can I do?
last 20 years for the Shi'ar, Dekan is revealed to be alive and takes over, Deathbird takes over, Lilandra gets killed, Gladiator takes over, Vulcan conquers the throne. It's been a lot. The Imperial Guard just kind of serve whoever's in charge, and they show up on the page once in a while where they fight whoever the foe is for that particular issue. There's kind of three moments for Nightside. She appears, you know, a dozen times or so as just a part of the ensemble, but there's kind of three moments she gets. In Uncanny X-Men 480, this is where the Imperial Guard are fighting Vulcan. We do get kind of a cool power circuit where Nightside blankets Vulcan with darkness while Oracle pulls Vulcan's fears from his mind. And then Hobgoblin, who's the like little shapeshifter guy, like turns into those fears. So there's kind of a fun, like,
Oh.
ooh, they use their powers together. But you know, Vulcan kicks their asses and then takes over. The second moment that she kind of gets is in War of Kings number one, which is where Vulcan sends the Imperial Guard to fight Black Bolt and the Inhumans because Crystal is marrying Ronan the Accuser. It's a whole thing too. They're like
Okay.
creating peace. The Inhumans like ruled the Kree
Interesting
Empire
couple.
for about 5 seconds. And
I wish that couple all the success. I just don't think it's gonna work
it did not.
out.
But Crystal, God, I love Crystal. Nightside, the Inhumans build these like giant echo weapons that like resemble Black Bolt's tuning fork, and it like sends out sound waves.
Okay.
And Nightside is seemingly killed by that. So there's certain entries that say like there's another version of Nightside now. She didn't need to die. It's fine. The third
I was gonna say she is canonically dead there, isn't she?
moment. It could be read either way. Regardless, the Imperial Guard always has backup Nightsides, but I kind of
There's
like
a
the
whole
idea.
planet full of them.
I kind of like the idea of the original Nightside being the one that we still have. But they're, you know, whoever writes will explore that on the page for us someday, and we can see
Well,
how that
in
turns out.
Mr. and Mrs. X, this is what I was gonna say. Like, Mr. and Mrs. X, there is a truly insane moment where
Oh, it is
it's
confirmed on the
peak comic.
page. You're right.
And it's so overt. It's stated so overt that I'm like, oh, is she going to do a bunch in the next issue? And she didn't get to. But it is one of those things where you're just like, I think Rogue, or maybe it's what's her face, who's the Inhuman that they're running, but Cerise. I think Cerise is like, or was that Nightside? Or was that Nightside of the Imperial Guard? And Rogue is just like, that's not the original Nightside. It's like, that's the new Nightside. The original Nightside died. And I was like, oh.
Nightside gets to like steal Xandra's egg. This is like
Yeah.
Professor X and Lilandra's like genetically engineered child in an egg, and she gets to steal it for a second. It's fine. She's in like Thanos and, Kingbreaker and Guardians of the Galaxy, and she doesn't have a lot to do, but I'm very intrigued by this character. There's also a book called X-Men Empire's End, which is by Diane Duane from like several years ago, where it does give some exploration into the mindsets of the Imperial Guard. Not technically canon unless you count it a particular way, but it's a prose novel. I like vibing on these characters. It gives me a particular like flavor about how a character works. What is it that, if you got to write your Dark Force series or your Nightside exploration, what is it that you would explore about this character? What is it that you find fascinating about her powers or her psychology?
I mean, obviously, for sure, the she her being afraid of power set, both it taking control of her or consuming her life or representative of some darkness, but also as like a literal like, oh crap, I don't want to fall into that. I think that's always cool to explore with these Dark Horse characters. Like, my whole thing with Darkstar a lot was I was like doing a very, very basic seed planting idea of like a romance with her and Chernobog. They both have this dark power, and there's just the idea of like, am I monstrous in some way too? Am I using something that's evil? Like, am I doing good? Can I do good, etc. I don't know. I also love this falls under she. So I guess the conclusion of this podcast for me is that she is a Ryan Katie core character, but much more. She is not like a my typical like evil woman that I'm like, ah, she can do no wrong, like praise her. It's really much more like I love when good characters are involved with spooky stuff and are like reckoning with it in terms of, no, I can use this for good. This is just like, scary things are not always directly evil or whatever. They have their own uses, or I want to explore that or touch that side of, and like reckoning with that, not even from like an edgy, not at all really from like an edgy, oh, this darkness, but like a whoa, like I'm touching something big and ominous and eldritch. I don't know, when good
Another
guys have to reckon with the eldritch.
thing I've never mentioned on my show before, which is a wild X-Men jump, if you're ready. In X-Men
All right.
Spotlight Starjammers, we meet two very weird characters named Black Light and White Noise. They have golden skin, they are in black and white uniforms, they're twins. One of them manipulates dark energy and the other light energy, and they are stated on the page to be the children of Deathbird, which is insane. If you take
What?
this, if you take this canonically, that means that they are genetically related, at least in some capacity, to the entire Shi'ar family, but they're also then related through Lilandra or Deken's DNA to Adam X the Extreme, who is connected to the Summers family because he also has Kate Summers' DNA in him. So there's this weird characters, Black Light and White Noise. You can find them in like four issues ever. Spotlight on Starjammers 2, War of Kings number 1, Realm of Kings Imperial Guard 5. I think that's it actually. Super obscure, weird X-Men knowledge.
Cuts. I any X-Men family tree is always fascinating to look at, but once it's somebody who's involved with the Shi'ar, I mean, you need several wipes to map that out.
The fact that Deathbird has children named Black Light and White Noise just cracks me the fuck up. I think it's hilarious.
She has a whole life that nobody ever lets her talk about. She's got a lot of stuff that she does. It's not all conquering.
There are, I have major comics writing aspirations myself, so my brain's always working in story mode. I don't know if I'll ever break it in that way, but I'd love to. There are two Nightside stories I would write. One of them is very Nightside specific, where it's her exploring her powers, getting lost in the
Yeah.
Dark Force dimension. It's her like hero's journey to get back out and find her
Love
space.
that.
You get some cool use of her powers, some cool hero moments. Maybe she does something real evil at the end, and then she's back with her team. The other one that I think would be so fucking fun to write is like the Imperial Guard girls, like day out. They're like shopping on a foreign planet. It's like Oracle, Nightside, Hussar, Astra. You know, like they're all hanging out, like fashion, and they end up fighting some sort of space supervillain, like Devos the
Yeah.
Devastator. You know, that kind of story I think would also be really delightful.
That would be fun. That's the other thing is that now everyone laments about this kind of thing these days. I know it's not a new take, but like you don't because our runs are shorter and we have less ongoing series, you really lose out on the opportunity for fun one-shots like that, And I understand that the market cannot support a 50-issue Imperial Guard series anymore, but if it could, and in the world that it should, you could get to do the Girls' Day Out one shot, and everyone would love it, and they'd get nominated for an
That could
Eisner.
even be, but that could even be an Infinity comic, right? It's all about
Of
format.
course.
Like a 48-page annual would be more fun, but you could do that in a one-part Infinity comic too, even. I
Hear
love
that, Marvel Infinity editors? You've got the pitch. It's a
that.
strip. Go.
I'm here. I'm here if you're listening. I hope you're seeing when we have these conversations, there's just like a vibe about the character that forms. And I remember
Oh,
every
yeah.
one of these conversations I've ever had. It's super fun to do these like deep dives into the obscure space. What a joy to join with you today. I'd love to hear any final thoughts you have. We're gonna put this out on September 11th. Where can people find you online? Is there anything you would like to plug?
Well, these days I'm mostly just online on Insta. I have a Twitter still at RYCADY. I don't post on there as much, but I retweet all like news about comic stuff for publications. And then usually I'm on Instagram. I'm at Rye underscore Katie. Final thoughts? Gosh, I do really wish I really loved that Imperial Guard story that we got to do, and I was really happy with it. It was very, very fun. But now I'm like, I literally, as I was preparing for this podcast, I was like, could I have swapped out? I'm like, who could I have gotten rid of so I could have put Nightside in? And I don't have a good answer. I don't think there is, but justice for Nightside in every way.
God, Nightside and like Manta, like buddy comedy would be fun. Nightside
Like,
and Neutron. Neutron's canonically gay. Steve Orlando created that character Somnus, who like his power is if he spends the night with you, like in your dreams, you live a whole life together that you wake up.
Oh, I didn't know that aspect of it. That's
Yeah,
awesome.
he did that with Neutron. Like he and Neutron spent the night together and like he like spent a whole lifetime with Neutron that we've never seen. And then he woke up like having new skills that he'd learned from his life with Neutron and their dreams. It's great.
Hell yeah.
Anyway, like Nightside and Neutron, like buddy team up would be so fun.
Well, now I'm like, okay, you got to get Nightside and Manta, Cloak and Dagger, Black Light and White Noise. Like, you get those three duos, like, kind of, I don't know. There's something there.
Little light and dark, a little Ebony and Ivory action.
Yeah,
That'd
it'll be
be
the black and
delightful.
white cookie team up crew,
Nightside's time on Earth living as a black woman. Yeah, there's a lot to explore with this character that I
Yeah,
think is
someone other than me should like actually write that book. Like low key, like seeing her there and being like, I don't know, like that was the early 90s. Like, I don't know, I'm sure she had quite an experience. And I'm sure they were living such a weird bohemian existence in that run. Like there's one panel where they're all hanging out in Gladiator's room looking at a message from Lilandra, and like Gladiator's full on like naked, like sitting in bed kind of like, and they're all just sort of like crowding around. And I'm like, yeah, because they're a team and they all just live together. They're all just friends.
Melrose Place, except with the Imperial Guard.
Yes. They're just like, I'm not saying it's like a weird thing. I'm just like, they're really comfortable with each other. They're all a team and their personal lives are intertwined. Of course, they're like barging into each other's rooms and like interrupting each other and asking questions. It's fun.
I love putting these together, Ryan. Thank you so much for joining me today. I'm Chad Anderson. You can follow the show, Graham Alkin underscore land on Instagram. We are putting out new content all the time. The episode on the Patreon after this is going to be all about the Claremont character, Warhawk, who is a sometimes used X-Men villain, Vietnam War vet. He's an interesting guy. He's got like a lot of Luke Cage backstory. So Patrick Lugo, Justin Kosmachuk will be joining me for that. Out on the main show shortly after this, we will be jumping into some interim content. Watch for explorations on the issues Avengers 2.1 and then we've got a couple like a handful of what ifs that we're gonna do just that are based in the early continuity. In October we jump to the Incredible Hulk stuff and then we're building toward Giant Size where we'll land in early 2025. So thanks everybody for the ongoing support. Thank you for your time and talents today, Mr. Ryan Katie. We'll see you all back here next time on the Graham Alkin Lane Patreon.
It's Ram Truck Month. Hurry into your local Ram dealer for great deals on the trucks built to help you drive your own story. Like Ram 1500, Motor Trend's 2025 Truck of the Year. And right now, purchase and get $7,250 combined cash allowance, plus get $1,250 bonus cash allowance when financed on the 2025 Ram 1500 Bighorn Crew Cab. Go to ram.com and hurry to Ram Truck Month today. Financing for well-qualified buyers through Stellantis Financial Services. Not all customers will qualify. Residency restrictions apply. Take retail delivery by 3/31/2025.